Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour Plus Edition. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Good evening. Shalom, Captain Aparia.
Shalom, Officer Nehemiah.
Officer Nehemiah in the house today. All praise to the Most High.
Nene.
Hey.
Hey.
There he is.
Welcome back to the show.
It's Uncle Nene.
Gotta do a dance.
We've got Teddy Pendergrass with us. All praise to the Most High.
Uncle Nene.
Teddy.
Teddy. Take them all.
Turn them all.
All praise to the Most High Christ. We are back for another episode. We had a little technical difficulties on the back end, so we didn't have the long lead-in. I know some of y'all like to get in there and jam. Oh, they said the mic is low? Whose mic? Was it Teddy Pendergrass' mic?
My mic low?
Jam.
My mic?
Oh, jam.
Who mic?
Mine too? Right, can't hear. What's going on, Ashai? There's a few people saying they can't hear. Mic low.
What up, Jabari? Shalom, brother.
We're getting that situated right now.
You're getting it situated right now. Okay, they are getting the sound situated right now.
All praises.
Right now. Okay, Teddy Pendergrass and me. The mic's are low.
Oh, me?
Yeah, both of us.
Okay.
All right, they're saying we're good now.
We're good now? Okay, all right. All praise to the Most High. Praise to the Most High. So we're back for another episode. We had little technical difficulties. It wasn't the producer's fault.
My man said nothing but a TKO word. Nothing but a TKO. Yeah, we got him. He repents it.
I know, right? In the regeneration, right?
He's 78 years old, but he repents it. The good for 78, bro. Black don't crack, son.
That's right.
Hey, so, yeah, we had some tech difficulties, so we couldn't give you a long lead-in. We know some people like to jam to the OR music before we get started. We cue some viewers up and all that. So, Lord's will, we'll have people continue to join us. They'll see that we're on and that they didn't think that we just weren't having a show. So, producers, make sure you're monitoring the feed and stuff like that. I don't know. So you got this dude here that apparently, I mean, I think he watches our shows a lot.
I don't know what's going on.
And now all of a sudden he's talking about some Freemasons. Look, all I'm going to tell you is prove that ignorance and not with some conspiracy. Look, their formation is this and their formation is that and all that other stuff. Yeah, the scriptures, Christ said, you'll know them by their works, right? So get out of here with that noise. Matter of fact, the scripture we're going to start with today, this is how people get confused with that sort of stuff. Let's get Sirach 3 and 23. Because like I said, we're gonna open up with a script.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Open up with a script for the people that can't appreciate the history being brought out. And say, oh, he went so long that we got a scripture. Freaking talk radio show.
Right.
Let's bring the scripture out.
This is the book of Ecclesiasticus, chapter 3 and verse 23. Be not curious and unnecessary. Oh, you want 24?
23?
Nah, that's it. That's the bomb.
Be not curious in unnecessary matters, for more things are showed unto thee than men understand.
Right. The stuff that's coming out of this Bible, okay, is more things than men understand. So when you start going off into this, Freemason stuff or whatever, that's all distractions. That's all that gets our people riled up in that conspiracy theory thing. You know what that falls under? Diverse doctrines. Okay, that's diverse doctrines that you're going to come out with all that madness. All right. The Bible commands us to not be curious in those type of things, because what's shown unto us from the Most High and the wisdom that's in that is more than men understand. Let me get that in Luke. Is it 18 where he says, for many have desired to know? I think it's 18. I'm wrong. I always get confused. You know which one I'm talking about?
I'm fine looking.
I always mess this up.
What's the paraphrase?
It's towards the end of Luke, because that's when Christ is.
No, it's 10 and 23. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's where I mess up. I don't know why I thought 18. Was way off. 10:23.
The book of Luke, chapter 10, verse 23. And he turned him unto his disciples and said privately, Blessed are the eyes which see the things that ye see.
Right. So just like we read in Sirach, where he said that don't be curious in unnecessary matters, because more things are shown unto thee out of the scriptures than men are able to understand. So Christ says, he takes it to another level and he says, it's a blessing. He says, blessed are the eyes which see the things that ye see. So what the disciples saw in these last days, we're starting to understand those scriptures as well. Because for years and years and years, this was sealed to many of our people, namely because in captivity, we were not allowed to read, or our oppressors went and they put things in languages we didn't understand. And when now in these last days, as this understanding is coming out, we are seeing the same things that the disciples saw before us. Come on, read.
For I tell you that many prophets and kings have desired to see those things which ye see.
Right. Many prophets and kings. He's talking about that. This is stuff that important people in the earth want to know and desire to know. Come on.
And have not seen them.
And they cannot grasp this the way we're able to grasp this. Come on.
And to hear those things which ye hear and have not heard them.
Right. And to hear those things which we hear and have not heard them. So here we are, week after week on this show. Another brother just mentioned Escaping a Plantation. That's another show where they recently did a show destroying Freemasonry. And you're going to, and you know, that's old, actually. Like, that's some GMS old stuff that they used to try to pull up with no substance. Look at their formation. Look at this. Look at that. Listen, you could find the shape of a triangle, circle, square, whatever you want, and whatever you try to make your eyes see. So you're here with that madness. Christ said it's a blessing to see what we see, that there's kings and prophets of the earth that have desired to know this. And it's revealed unto us and our people, and then we want to go off into some other madness. Go back to Sirach. Read 3:23 again. We're going to go down to 25.
Yes, sir. The book of Ecclesiasticus, chapter 3, verse 23. Be not curious in unnecessary matters.
You know, unnecessary matters is trying to connect stuff to Freemasonry, right? Our minds are so perverted that the argument is we do so well as the premier Israelite organization. I say that proudly, not boastfully, because our secret sauce is keeping the commandments. That's what we abide by. That's what we push. That's what we're beholden to. Because that's the thing that's going to help us rule the planet Earth. As I often say, those laws, statutes, and commandments, this Bible, that's going to be the new constitution, the constitution in the earth when we're in rulership. The equivalent of what the constitution is going to be the Holy Bible. And you got these people here with this old corny BS talking about Freemasonry. That's things that are unnecessary matters, right? But our people's minds are so perverted. They're so subverted that they can't see the success of what's prophesied in the Bible, as is because you have men in the earth today that are teaching the laws, statutes, and commandments to the Israelites in the faith of Christ. They see it as, no, Freemasonry is pushing them up. That's why they got pulled. That's why they make things happen. That, do you see the sick mind that takes to see something positive as a negative? Read on.
For more things are showed unto thee than men understand.
That's what Christ was talking about in Luke 10. Read on.
for many are deceived by their own vain opinions.
He says you cannot. That's like in Proverbs 3 and 5 when he says, lean not, trust in the Lord with all thy heart and lean not on your own understanding. He says many are deceived by their own vain opinion. What you think, if you think we're down with Freemasons or whatnot, that's why I say prove it. Shut up. Keep it moving. It says what you think is vain. It's worthless. Come on.
And an evil suspicion hath overthrown their judgment.
Right, because this brother, the name looks familiar. I think he's watched us for weeks on end.
He's on consistently.
He's on consistently, and now he shows up this week. So what happened between last week and this week that you watched or got exposed to that now has you throwing that all away? That's you found yourself shipwrecked because you didn't put respect on the understanding that's shown unto you that prophets and kings desire to know, and they can't know it, and they don't understand it. Come on, verse 25.
Without eyes, thou shalt want light. Profess not the knowledge, therefore, that thou hast not.
Right, so you're trying to reach for things above your strength instead of humbling yourself with what's been brought out, and not just on this show, on all the shows, all right? And it says, without eyes, thou shalt want light. Your spiritual eye, you're allowing it to get shut. After weeks and weeks of progress, and who knows what other shows you watch, right? I'm sure we're not the only one if you were on it. Weeks and weeks of progress, your eyes now got shut. So you want light. So you're trying to profess knowledge that you don't have, talking about Freemason garbage. Get out of here with that nonsense.
Give me Revelation 3, we're going to read 15 and 16. Here's what his issue is.
Book of Revelation, you said 3 and 15?
Mm-hmm.
Book of Revelation, chapter 3 and verse 15. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot.
Right.
I would thou wert cold nor hot.
Uh-huh. So go ahead.
So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth.
You got people being tossed to and fro, man, with all different types of doctors. Man, I ain't even going to entertain it, man, but I wanted to go ahead. Yo, really? That's how you're going to do, bro?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
how you're going to do, bro? Really? I mean, come on, man.
Yep.
Really, mm-hmm. man? With everything going on in the world, man. Sister just posted here, man. You know, she's excited because we're making history. You're damn right we're making history. Okay, our history. All right, and you're gonna come out with some beat. Come on, man. Are you serious, bro, man? Yo, keep them thoughts to yourself, man. All right, this ain't the place for that. If you feel that way, man, yo, you ain't gotta watch us, bro.
Hey, keep it moving.
Yo, if you feel that way, man, yo, you gonna go ahead and be a turncoat like that, bro? You gotta watch us, man. Don't watch us, man. All right, don't come out here and try to pervert people that want to learn's mind, bro. All right, this ain't that place for that day, man. And you know we don't roll that way. Yeah, because I know you follow us. Girl, don't give me that BS, man.
Right. That's why, hey, you want to keep watching? Your comments ain't going to come through. You're not going to try to freaking spread that BS on here. Go somewhere else with that.
Freaking damn state.
Pull up the thing about Canada. So tonight we're talking about Cuba. All right. We're going to talk about a short history of American Cuba. Laws will be able to get through all of it. A lot of history stuff, so there's a lot of reading. We're going to continue to watch. It's about 10 minutes of the documentary that we've been watching that devotes to this. The book has some information on it. I say it's a short history because there's actually a lot more dynamically with Cuba than what we're going to cover tonight. But it'll set a good foundation for those who don't understand or only have America's understanding of what's going on in Cuba. And that's why I say it's a short history of America and Cuba. The other thing, the picture, where it says number 5, Canada, because then that pertains to this, and then we'll bring this up. So I was leaving. I'm subscribed to this. I subscribe to certain news alerts and things like that so I can catch headlines and whatnot. And so I have this thing. CNN has this thing called 5 Things, and they'll every morning they email me like the 5 things that are trending the most in news, right? So it gives me like a little summary, and then I choose if I want to read the whole article or not. So it says Canada again. So I'm bringing this up because several weeks back we did the Indian Reformation schools, or I forgot what they called them. It was Indian schools. I know that, but it was something else. They had a name for it. I can't remember the name now. Anyway, they're Indian schools, right? Oh, residential. That's what they called it. I call them Reformation schools. They say residential. So it says more than 160 undocumented and unmarked graves have been found in British Columbia's Southern Gulf Islands, once home to the Cooper Island Residential School. And there's been, every week it seems like there's been another school. And we said there would be as they start investigating because they had a lot more schools. It's funny because as I was reading it, I said, gosh, they're talking about Canada and Canada got to face their thing. America had the same schools. America did the same thing, but everybody's on Canada right now. So it says more than 160 undocumented and unmarked graves have been found in British Columbia's Southern Gulf Islands, once home to the Cooper Island Residential School. This marks the latest in a string of grim discoveries made recently at similar sites across Canada. Excuse me. The hundreds of unmarked graves and unclaimed remains have forced Canada to contend with its violent history of residential schools. And I was like, yeah, but what about America? Where countless indigenous people were once forced to attend. In a 1997 documentary produced with funding from the federal government, survivors of the Cooper Industrial School describe it as Canada's Alcatraz. In response to the recent discoveries, U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland announced an initiative to investigate the policies and practices behind a similar native boarding school system in the U.S. So they're trying damage control. They're trying to get ahead of it because this thing in Canada is coming out and somebody there is saying, wait a second, we did that too. So, yeah, if they're upset about it here, we did that too. So let's go to the article. Now, this is an opinion piece by this reporter, Daniela Zalkman. It says, U.S. begins its reckoning on Native American children. And like I said, we're going to jump into Cuba, but we're going to touch on this briefly because I don't want this to lose traction. You know, like I think we need to keep our eyes to this, especially, again, when it comes to Northern Kingdom, because the BS that's out there, and it's funny, and not to diverge again to Jesus Moreno, right? But by his name, I would presume he's Northern Kingdom. And the people that push that IUIC rolls with Freemasonry is the same type of people that say that you're not Northern Kingdom, Jesus Moreno, that Latinos aren't Israelites.
No, let me give any light, man.
Dumbass. Dumbass. After a First Nations community used ground-penetrating radar to discover more than 200 unmarked graves at an indigenous residential school in Canada, the U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, announced in late June that she was launching the Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative. It would investigate the policies and practices behind a similar native boarding school system in the U.S. that was meant to forcibly assimilate indigenous youth into white Western American society. And that little piece right there, remember that, because that plays a role in when we start discussing Cuba in a little bit. These schools, which the U.S. government first opened in 1879, were the sites of physical, cultural, psychological, and emotional violence perpetrated against indigenous children. They continue to operate to this day, though no longer with the mandate of eradicating indigenous culture and identity. That's not true. The mandate is not obvious like it once was, like probably in their placards and in their mission statement. But the school system in general, what they've basically done is it's the thing that they don't say, but what do they say, like the unspoken rule or the unspoken guidance, right? That still is their goal. The mandate is to eradicate indigenous culture and identity, and that goes for all of us. That's why they don't want to teach slavery in the schools anymore. That's why they're so up in arms about the critical race theory being taught in schools. All right? So it says, their initial stated mission, as documented in the Civilization Fund Act of 1819, was to introduce the habits and arts of civilization to Native Americans, while the U.S. government worked to dispossess them of their lands as rapidly as possible. A reality that former Assistant Secretary of Indian Affairs, Kevin Grover, acknowledged more than 20 years ago. So let me tell you, that's gangster and that's power in the earth, because they're the only people on this planet that can acknowledge their atrocities, their Holocaust-like behaviors, and not get charged for crimes against humanity like that. Because, right, everybody gets on Germany and they still charge these people for what they did to the so-called Jewish people and all that stuff, right? But you come to this and they acknowledge their offense and they can do it openly and have no repercussions behind it.
But let me tell you how that's even BS, right? Because they recruited Nazis on the Operation Paperclip,
right,
to go ahead and but it's I'm telling you, man, this whole thing is a freaking scam, man.
Yeah. And you know what? And people... This goes to show, again, that it's such a facade that they put out. People buy into that stuff and they say, oh, well, they acknowledged it. And listen, there's stuff that we've been going over the show with the School of the Americas and all the stuff that they acknowledge it and nobody's – like the Bay of Pigs invasion. Like that's a known thing where they supported these guys to try to overthrow the Cuban government and it failed miserably. like they have egg on their face from that thing. And you think that was the only time that they did that? Like their stuff is shown, but like we're so caught up in sports and celebrity that like we're like oh okay.
And what it is, man, our people are selfish, man.
Yeah.
And until you really know what this truth is all about, they got the I'm gonna do me mentality. All right. If you're in this truth, you don't have that I'm gonna do me mentality. You have I'm gonna do we. I'm gonna do us. Okay, as a nation, too many of our people, man, because they drowned and have choked on the doctrines of America, man. They're all about themselves because, again, that's the divide and conquer mentality. That's the Willie Lynch letter at its best. The Willie Lynch letter, man, make no mistake about it, man. That's a strategy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the playbook on how to keep us Negroes, man, from freaking uniting, bro. That's really all it is, man. Right, and yeah, I said us Negro, because at the end of the day, we all black.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
I know what I said.
Right.
That wasn't a mistake.
Negro's not identified by a group of people by color and hair texture. Negro is a state of mind that they created for our people, and we all suffer from that. Yeah. Well, let me get 2 Timothy's 2 and 3. This is what you were saying. Is that our people are selfish. The Bible prophesied about that. So that's why stuff like this could come out and our people are just unfazed.
Right. Most of our people are selfish, i.e. two-thirds. That's why only one-third is going to make. And even out of that one-third, there's going to be some purging coming out.
Go ahead, read this. 2 Timothy 3 and start at 1.
The book of 2 Timothy, chapter 3 and verse 1. This know also, that in the last days, perilous times shall come.
And he's going to describe these perilous times, right? Because what he's specifically talking about is that there's going to be Israelites, all right? Not repenting Israelites, but there's going to be people that are Israelites by blood, which are the so-called blacks, Hispanics, Native Indigenous, right? Those who meet the curses. He says that they are going to show themselves for what they really are and where their motivations really are. Come on.
For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy.
Lovers of their own selves. He starts with that, and then all of these are sub-things of that because they're not there for self. They're not about their people. They're not about their nation. So this type of information could come out, and they're so easily distracted by other things because that's more important to them. Oh, yeah. Who's better, LeBron or Jordan?
Right. Hey, hold on. A producer, right side of voice is not on. But one of the viewers, Michael Lobato, said right side of voice.
Yeah, I guess it's not balanced. I don't know. Go ahead, read.
Verse 3. Without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers.
Without natural affection, meaning no love for their people.
False accusers, incontinent.
You know what? Incontinent means you can't. Right, it's similar to inconsistent, and so also that Cap brought out at the beginning of the show. So they're incontinent. Come on,
fierce.
I was reading an article the other day about the gang violence in the Bronx, right? Because we from the Bronx, and they're saying it's gotten crazy over there. You know, like it's one escalation to another. I think within a week's time, like it was like four retaliations.
Yo, they're knocking people out with cinder blocks.
Bro, it's insane.
They're not going to be robbing people with. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, right in the street. Yep.
Yep. So it says fierce. Come on.
Despisers of those that are good.
They're going to hate us. We had all types of things going on with us where it's our people that we got to watch out for. It's our own people that we got to watch out for attacking us. Come on.
Traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God.
That's what it goes down to. That's why this type of information could come out, and they get so easily distracted by all the agents of socialization that Esau has in place for our people. Come on.
Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such, turn away.
Right. So, listen, that goes from your Christians, right, even to your Israelites that supposedly profess that they're about this walk, and then they're lovers of themselves more than anything else.
And so it's saying the sound is fading on and off and on, producer.
here. The sound is fading off and on. So now someone said sound is okay now.
Yeah, but if it's fading off and on, it's going to be okay. Then it's going to be intermittent.
Are we all right? Okay. Let me keep reading. Let's go back to the article.
The sound is going in and out.
The current U.S. initiative follows Canada's footsteps in addressing the impact and legacy of coercive assimilation policies on Indigenous communities. From 2008 to 2015, Canada went through a similar process with its own Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a seven-year-long effort to collect survivor testimony and document the full scope of Canada's Indian residential school system. Now it's America's turn. Thanks to Hallin, one of the first Native women in Congress and the first ever Native cabinet secretary, who fittingly now oversees the Bureau of Indian Education, the United States will finally have a chance to formally reckon with its own history on this issue. Listen, they haven't even reckoned properly with the so-called African slavery. They haven't reckoned properly they're going to reckon properly with the Native Indian schools, but they haven't reckoned properly with the Trail of Tears. They haven't reckoned properly with what we brought out in Mexico. And how they ceded the land from them, it's all BS. So there are a handful of critical lessons to be taken away from the Canadian investigation process. To understand the true magnitude of this history, it is vital that the U.S. government begin by sourcing and collecting accurate boarding school data on enrollment and other statistics. It will permit the U.S. in some tiny way to acknowledge and remember every child who was made to endure this inhumane treatment. God, this to them, this is recompense. This is recompense. See, that's why we got it. Only God is going to give us the proper justice. Only the Most High through his son, Christ. There is so much Americans do not know about the scale of the U.S. Indian boarding school system. And guess what? Most of them don't care. We just read in 2 Timothy about that. Information is spotty and varies significantly from source to source. The Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition, a nonprofit dedicated to healing in Native communities affected by Indian boarding schools in the U.S. How are they healing them? How about you give them back some of their land?
Right.
How about you throw some money their way? How they hit? Do they go in there and give them hugs? Do they rub their back? Boy, I tell you, has noted that in 1926, there were already 357 schools across 30 states, but the total number may be closer to 500. The U.S. government also has no idea how many students were taken away from their families and communities and sent to these schools. NABS estimates that about 20,000 students were enrolled in 1900, and that figure had more than tripled to 60,889 by 1925. But the total count is still unknown. In Canada, by contrast, those statistics are now available. About 150,000 First Nations, Métis, and Inuit children were legally compelled to attend residential school. At the conclusion of, legally compelled. You know what the legally compelled was? We brought this out. See, these articles are so deceptive. Their parents would go to jail and they would take them anyway if they didn't enroll them in the schools.
Wow.
All right? That's legal. That's legal compulsion. At the conclusion of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's work, roughly 80,000 of them were still alive. When the commission's report, which covered the duration of Canada's Indian residential school system from 1828 to 1997, was issued in 2015, it stated that an estimated 41 children died while in school. It's more than that. But there was widespread understanding that this figure was far too low. Schools stopped keeping detailed records of student deaths in the early 20th century. Why would you stop keeping the records? Record keeping is supposed to get better as technology comes out. Because they knew, they were like, oh, it's just far too many of these.
Record keeping means exactly that. You're keeping the records.
Right. Right.
What the hell is this?
They stopped keeping records.
That made no sense, bro.
It says now there's even more evidence that this is true. In the last month alone, three First Nations communities in Canada employing ground-penetrating radar technology have discovered mass unmarked grave sites. An estimated 215 at Kamloops Indian Residential School in British Columbia, 751 at Maryvale Indian Residential School in Saskatchewan, and 182 at St. Eugene's Mission School in British Columbia. And with the relatively recent accessibility of this technology, it's possible that other former boarding school sites across both Canada and perhaps the United States could make similar discoveries. If we extrapolate these numbers to include the 139 schools that opened in Canada, there could be tens of thousands of children buried across the country. In the U.S., Dartmouth scholar Preston McBride's research recently predicted that as many as 40,000 indigenous students died during their time in boarding school.
It was more than that.
There's a reason why information about students' deaths was so low to surface in Canada. It was intentionally obfuscated by both the governments and the Indian agents who were meant to enforce these policies. Shortly after the chief medical officer at Indian Affairs sounded the alarm of student deaths at the residential schools, the federal government stopped recording deaths around 1920, said Justice Murray Sinclair, who headed to the Canadian TRC, from diseases that were exacerbated by poor living conditions in the boarding school dorms, malnutrition and mistreatment, and the extremely common phenomenon of students running away and dying in the process from exposure, drowning, starvation, or encounters with wild animals.
And how come they never stopped their records of dominance?
Right.
It never stops. They make sure that that's in every book in your school.
Right. They were trying to conceal this. They were trying to conceal this. Just like they're trying to, they don't want to teach critical race. They want to take slavery out the school systems. The governor here passed a thing that you can't teach critical race in the schools. As these discoveries surface and when the Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative reaches its conclusion, it's crucial that when Americans are armed with these findings, they ask, what is next? Well, we know what they think is next, that their houses will continue forever. At the conclusion of the Canadian TRC in 2015, the commission issued a list of 94 calls to action, which range from correcting disparities in the health, education, and criminal justice sectors for Indigenous people to reassessing government attitudes towards Indigenous child welfare. Canadian historian Ian Mosby has tracked the calls to action regularly, and as of late 2020, he determined that only 8 of the 94 calls had been fully implemented. That's why it's all just feel good. Oh, see, they're doing something. Listen, they're so used to making decrees and proclamations and declarations that they never follow through on, all right? There's no point in assessing America's past and reflecting on reconciliation if it does not lead to substantial action towards justice. Envisioning strategies for healing and reparations is only meaningful if there is momentum behind that vision. You see, and that's the main reason, well, one of them, we know it's their heart. It's just not going to allow them to do it. They will never pay reparations for any of the atrocities that they did, because then they realize they got to pay. So if they pay reparations to so-called Southern Kingdom, right, for slavery, then they got to pay reparations to Gad. If they pay reparations to Gad, then they got to pay reparations to Central South America, the Caribbean as well, for all the stuff that they did there.
Right, because under the Clinton presidency, they admitted that they were sterilizing the girls in Guatemala.
Yep.
They admitted it not too long ago. So you got to pay for that too. Mm-hmm. And you got to pay for the ones that I brought out that they did in Puerto Rico, right? All the atrocities that they did to all the Northern Kingdom as well. It's just too many, man. Right. We're number like the sand of the sea, man. They know that.
Yep. So they know that. They're like, damn, we can't. We pay reparations to one group, we set a precedent where we got to pay reparations to all. Because their founding of their empire was built on blood. We were talking about that last week. By the sword they'll live. We brought that out in the book of Genesis. So though it has barely utilized it, Canada has built a solid roadmap, and the U.S. can too. But then the U.S. government must fervently commit to doing everything possible to mend a century of harm. You see, and this is the type of stuff where it becomes so much fluff to me, right? Even if they were to commit, you're still trusting a people that never kept their word when it came to anything that they would do with us. Perfect. Not a one. They didn't even keep their word with Britain when they came over here. They did the Revolutionary War. They couldn't even keep their word to their own kind.
That's Esau against Esau.
Right. They're eternally known as those truce breakers, as those oath breakers. Mm-hmm. They keep no covenants. And we're here expecting them to honor something with us? Come on.
Hey, reparations means to repair, man. Okay, they ain't trying to repair our nation.
No.
All right? And it ain't their job to do so. It's our job to do so through the Spirit of the Most High God. It's very simple. We're gonna nowhere in the Scripture does it say that the other nations are gonna go ahead and restore us.
Right.
All right. On the contrary, it says in Ezekiel 37, we, as the waters rise, are gonna restore ourselves and become one nation.
Right.
Come on, man.
Hey, get that in Amos 9, because he said reparations means to repair. Christ is going to repair, right? Through the Most High, right? Christ is going to repair. Let me get Amos 9, where it talks about the tabernacles.
Right, exactly. Somebody said, they do is waving tokens. Yeah, they're giving us crumbs.
Right.
And our people freaking jump on that thing. Come on, man, stop. They put everybody to sleep with stimmies and all this crap.
Right. My Bible has a little thing before we read these verses. It says, Israel's fortunes to be restored. reparations, restoration. It's all the same thing. Come on.
The book of Amos, chapter 9, verse 11. In that day will I rise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old.
Right, so the tabernacles of David, when he says as the days of old, he's talking about when all Israel was united as one kingdom. So all Israel was going to be brought up, okay? That's the repair that we should be seeking, not some money that they might throw at us, because that reparations, that's a rest that is polluted and will destroy our people. Because with that money, what are we going to do with that? You're not going to go and try to rebuild your nation. You're going to go ahead and you're going to use it to buy the American dream, to live the American lifestyle.
For yourself.
For yourself. For yourself. It, here it says, in that day when Christ returns, the tabernacle of David, southern and northern kingdom, that is fallen, he said, it's going to be raised up and the breaches thereof will be closed. That's reparations. Come on.
That they may possess the remnant of Edom.
Right. And for them to give us true reparations, what we really deserve, they need to then submit themselves to us to be our servants. They can't just throw some money at us and try to maintain their ruling statusship. They got to say, here, we're going to give you back, right, because it's restoration, it's repair. We're going to give you back what we took from you. That's reparations, not your paper money. Come on.
And all of the heathen, which are called by my name.
So it says Edom and all the other nations then need to be our possession. That's restoration. That's reparations. Come on.
Saith the Lord that doeth this.
That's all I wanted on that. You going to say something, Kevin?
Yeah. What they need to give us back, right, is our rightful place of rulership. And they ain't going to do it. Okay. That's why the Most High God has to go ahead and do that through the Spirit, through us, through the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't going to do that. We ain't going to give it back once we got it.
Right. No,
the hell?
Yep. Oh, no, I closed something I didn't want to close. Hey, cue up the documentary.
Hey, they got the caller number. Was it 516-531-9797?
Yeah, let's make sure.
Caller number 516-531-9797 with your questions or comments.
Oh, that's what I didn't have there. Okay, let me bring that back up because I have a few wiki links. All right, I'm not going to finish that. I just wanted to bring that back into focus a little bit because I've been reading about it and I see it there. So, let's go in. So we're gonna continue on. The Cuban segment is about 10 minutes in here, so we'll watch it. I'll see, because as I was watching it, there was points where I wanted to stop, but I didn't really necessarily write it. We may stop and read at some point with these 10 minutes. Go ahead. Where's the sound? There's no sound.
You want him to start from the middle? Is that a cue point?
No, I think that's the end of the last thing. It's supposed to be 37:56. It says it in the comment section.
Yeah, it's in the group.
Yeah. I posted it on there where it starts on. 37:56, yeah, right there. Okay. But we need sound. There's no sound. Is that a restream thing or is that a you guys thing? All right, we're having some technical difficulties again. Okay, I don't got the energy to be upset. No, I really don't.
You want to sing, Teddy?
Yeah, you want to sing something, Teddy?
Keep the lights on so we can do this radio
Keep it righteous, show. Keep it righteous.
No, keep the lights on so we can do the radio show.
Okay.
Right, keep the lights on so we could do the radio show.
So we can hear the radio show. Come on.
Oh, they can hear it, but we can't hear it. But that don't help us.
Right. You know what? Sister brought a good point, right? DL. All right. Money's temporary. Rulership is forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. See how long they've been in freaking rulerships. 1453.
True that.
Well, before that, since Alexander the Greek.
Yep. 333.
They fell a little bit, then they came back in 1453.
Right.
Don't give me no stinking money.
Yeah, so they can hear it, but we can't. But if we can't, then it doesn't help us doing the commentary on it.
And it's their money, what they face.
That's a good point.
No, and it's going to go right back to them. Right. It's going to go right back to them.
Right, like she said, they just keep printing. That's nothing to them to do that. I'll give you money.
Right. I know. That, all praises, y'all can hear it, but if we can't hear it, then we can't bring things out. One day we'll
be broadcasting in the kingdom, Lord willing.
Yeah, that's right. Blood money.
Yep.
Do-do-do-do. All right. Maybe I'll start with a little reading then while you try to figure that out. Does that work? Can you talk to us and acknowledge?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to start with a little reading first, okay? We're going to pull up the Cuban War of Independence while they work on that so we can start with the background before we fast forward to America's involvement, right, the United States involvement. So Cuba's issues, much like Puerto Rico, right, starts with the War of Independence. They were still under Spanish rule, right? You had the Spanish-American War. Why do you have the book up? It should be the Cuban War of Independence from Wiki. Why is the book up? There we go. Okay. So I'm reading the Cuban War of Independence. So the Cuban War of Independence was 1895 to 1898, right? Guerra de Independencia Cubana was the last of three liberation wars that Cuba fought against Spain, right? Because remember, Spanish was not our initial language. We all spoke a native dialect, which was a watered-down version of Hebrew, basically, right? It kind of just, through the ages, it kind of got toned down, right? So it says they were fighting against Spain, right? The other two being the 10 Years' War and the Little War. So Cuba was always fierce in resisting, all right? The final 3 months of the conflict escalated to become the Spanish-American War. So it started, this is where the Spanish-American War genesis, right? With the United States forces being deployed in Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Philippine Islands against Spain. We covered Puerto Rico and the Spanish-American War when we spoke about them through the book, The War Against All Puerto Ricans. Historians disagree as to the extent that the United States officials were motivated to intervene for humanitarian reasons, but agree that yellow journalism exaggerated atrocities attributed to Spanish forces against Cuban civilians. So basically what they're trying to say is we know what America's involvement was, right? It goes back to the Monroe Doctrine and being the police and the and being the police and the authoritative power in the Western Hemisphere, right? But they're telling you here that the historians disagree how motivated the U.S. was for humanitarian reasons. It was not for humanitarian reasons. We see that when we went into the Domino Sugar, when we dealt with Puerto Rico, United Fruit in Guatemala, right? Their goal to get Spain out was to jump on more resources in the region and to not have a world power as an adversary so close to their front yard. So they wanted their agenda in these places. Now, yellow journalism, that was a new term to me. I read it. If you hover over it, it comes up. It just says it's the American term for journalism and associated newspapers that present little or no legitimate, well-researched news while instead using eye-catching headlines for increased sales, right? So it's kind of like the New York Post. Techniques may include exaggerations of news events, scandal-mongering, et cetera, right? So it's fake news. That's what it's saying, all right? So they're trying to say that it was fake news that exaggerated the atrocities that the Spanish were doing to Cuban civilians. That's the same thing that Spain always did, going back to Bartolome de las Casas, to when the friars came and the friars witnessed this stuff and journaled the atrocities and Spain tried to downplay it, right? So we've gone over that stuff on this show. Cap, you did it not too long ago, I think, to how they used to cut off the hands, have the babies, like two dogs fight, ripping the babies apart, hanging us up by the hands in 13 to try to mock Christ and the 12 disciples. All right, that sort of stuff. Let me see what else I want here with this part. So hold on. I don't want the background. Nope, I don't want to talk about Malti and Ybor City. Let's go to war, where it says war. Go down. Okay, so this was Spain's decree when they did the war, right? The war was to be waged by blacks and whites alike. All right, and we'll bring that out when we read the book about the cake not turned. What he means by that is that there needed to be both the darker skin involved and the lighter skin, right? Participation of all blacks was crucial for victory, right? I'm sorry, this was the decree by Cuba to fight against the revolution by Spain. So they said, look, it can't just be the light-skinned ones fighting. We got to have the dark-skinned ones. Hey, and it reminded me of Willie Lynch when you mentioned it, Cap, as I was reading some stuff in the books, because if we get to it today, we'll see. This might be a two-parter from a historical perspective. They talk about how the darker-skinned Cubans were against the lighter-skinned Cubans and so on and so forth. So it says participation of all blacks was crucial for victory. Spaniards who did not object to the war effort should be spared. So they are showing favor to their captors. They said if there were Spaniards who were okay with them fighting Spain that were living there, they'll be spared. Private rural property should not be damaged, right? And the revolution should bring new economic life to Cuba, because that was the goal, right? That's what they wanted to accomplish with that war. You got the video ready to go? I just wanted to give the background of where all that started. And basically, how America was able to get their way into the picture was right around the same time of the Spanish-American War. So around the same time they went into Puerto Rico, they went into Cuba, they went into the Philippines as well, and they wound up occupying, right? They helped us to a victory. I don't want to say help. They helped themselves to a victory and used us to help them under the guise of them helping us.
Hey, so what does that mean? It's a lie when Trump said he didn't know Puerto Rico was part of us. This is back then when they didn't even have satellites.
Right.
All right, so how did they know? They knew because of 1492.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the history that there was people that were living there that were the Israelites. They know, man. They know they're the Israelites, that we're the Israelites.
Right. Hey, and it goes back to Judah and Israel being oppressed together, and they won't let us go. They won't let us go.
They refuse to let us go.
Right. And they refuse to let us go. All right, go ahead. Let's play.
Wait, real quick, stop. You know why they refuse to let us go? They have to, because the minute it starts happening, what's happening here? Israel waking up, that's a problem. That's why they refuse to let us go, meaning they'll do whatever it takes to keep us as abused as we are, loving them, because they know that that's the secret sauce right there.
Right. Hey, before Judah 5, let's back it up. This is what Cap is talking about. This is what Cap is saying. They know this. Let's get straight to the point.
And it's the powers that be that I'm talking about, mm-hmm, know this.
5 and 20.
Yes, sir. The book of Judah, chapter 5 and verse 20. Read it out. Now therefore, my lord and governor, if there be any error in this people.
Sin, meaning if there be any sin, if they're asleep and they're not waking up, because verse 19, he says, now they are returned to their God, and they have come up from the places where they were scattered. Actually, start at 19.
Yes, sir. Verse 19. But now are they returned to their God, and are come up from the places where they were scattered.
That happened then, and that's happening now in these last days. That's happening now in these last days. We're returning to the one true God, all right, and coming up from the places where we were scattered, serving the Most High, anywhere this word has been taught, and our people are there, and God has given the increase. Come on.
And have possessed Jerusalem, where their sanctuary is.
Right, and in those days, they were going back into Jerusalem, right? Obviously, in this times, that's the controversy of Zion. We're not going back there till Christ returns. Come on.
And are seated in the hill country, for it was desolate. Now therefore, my lord and governor, if there be any error in this people, and they sin against their God, let us consider that this shall be their ruin, and let us go up, and we shall overcome them.
Right, so they notice. This is what Cap was just saying. Those elite, right, they understand and they know this. So they know that if they keep us from our God, if they keep us from keeping the commandments and the faith of Christ, then they will be able to maintain their rule. So it scares them what they're seeing now. Come on.
But if there be no iniquity in their nation, let my Lord now pass by, lest their Lord defend them and their God be for them and we become a reproach before all the world.
Do you know why they said that we become a reproach before all the world? Because they knew our scriptures and they knew our prophecies concerning them. Just like we read in Amos 9 and 12 when it said, oh, they're going to be restored and they're going to possess us, Edom and all the nations that are not Israel. So the reproach is we are going to be revealed. Our Psalms 83, our confederation, our craftiness against you, we will become the reproach against the whole world. And they cannot in their spirit, even though their arms are too short to box with God, allow that to happen.
Hey, hit it one more time, the last part. But if there is no...
But, oh, gotcha, from the top of 21. Mm-hmm. But if there be no iniquity...
Stop. They understand that our kryptonite is sin. He didn't say anything else. He didn't say, but if they be strong, if they be a lot of them, if they be skilled in war, he said, but if they be no iniquity, all right? Going back to what Jeremiah 50:33 says, they refuse to let us go. They have to keep us in sin. The strategy is keep us in sin. And the other the playbook for that is the Willie Lynch letter. You have to understand, man, they're deep, man. Y'all, see, a simple Negro man like this dude that was just out here talking smack, right, don't understand that thing. Because if you understood that, you won't come out with stupid things like that, right? If those of our people that understand that, they won't be going out and saying vote or die. If those that understood that, they wouldn't be like, can we all get along? That right there,
the hell is this?
Is the whole purpose of Esau, to keep us in iniquity with the men wearing dresses, pushing that thing with the freaking gay crap, the gay lesbian agenda, with flooding our streets with drugs, flooding our streets with guns, right? Going ahead and perpetrating hate between each other, separation, not recording things anymore, not reporting proper things, keeping some news out front, making it a black and white issue and not a black, brown and white issue. That's what that's saying right there. They understood. Remember, these were generals. This was his assistant. That was the king he was talking to. He said, our strategy is we got to make sure that they continue to sin. That's what that's saying right there.
Hey, I'm going to read an excerpt from the Willie Lynch letter. All right. I know you might want to show it on the screen. I'm going to post it in the group so you can get it up. And it goes right into what's being brought out right now. I'm posting it on the Telegram. All right, let me know when you got it. Because it goes with this. It goes with the whole... This is why it upsets me so much when I see whether it's Northern Kingdom having envy of Southern and Southern Kingdom trying to vex Northern Kingdom. I said, it really doesn't faze me. Individually, it doesn't bother me in any way, shape, or form personally, because I'm confident who we are, who the Bible says we are. And ain't nobody is going to try to shake that or make that waver from me, right? But it aggravates me because I know that this is in their head, all right? You got it? Scroll down. All right, we're going to start with excerpt from the letter. I've outlined a number of differences among the slaves, and I take these differences and make them bigger. So you guys aren't the same. You're light skinned. You're dark. You're not dark enough to be Israel. You speak Spanish. We speak English and, you know, African tongues or Haitian tongues or Jamaican tongues. Whatever it is. So when I hear that, what I hear is William Lynch. You think you're so clever, so crafty when that stuff comes out? What you're speaking is William Lynch. He says, I use fear, distrust, and envy for control purposes. These methods have worked on my modest plantation in the West Indies, and it will work throughout the South. Take this simple list of differences and think about them. On top of my list is age, but it's only there because it starts with an A. The second is color or shade. So what he's saying is make them have issues because of the age difference. Make them have differences because of the color differences. There is intelligence, size, sex, sizes of plantations, status on plantations, and sex is feminism. Mm-hmm. Sex is that feminist movement that tries to drive a wedge between the divine order that God has set of man being over the woman.
Hey, check it out. It says size of plantation. They destroyed us so much that we were proud that our plantation was that we worked on and was slaves on was better than the other one.
Yeah.
What kind of SH is that, bro?
Hey, do you know what that is now? When you say my project is rougher than
my
yours.
My project is rougher than yours.
My block is tougher
my
than
corner.
Yours.
That's my corner.
My corner is tougher than yours. Status on the plantation. Yo, you know who I am? You know how I am? People know who I am in my hood. Attitude of owners. Whether the slaves live in the valley, on a hill, east, west, north, south, have fine hair. Oh, I thought to be Israel, you had to have woolly hair only. He said they were slaves with fine hair. Coarse hair or tall or short.
Right. For him to mention that, that means there was different types of hair textures around.
Right. Well, and for him to mention that tells you, let's just read Jeremiah 50:33, tells you that. Tells you that.
And that's what I'm saying, man. With all this knowledge, this heavy knowledge, man, you're going to worry about some damn BS, man? I mean, come on, man. Yo, go kick rocks, dude. I mean, really, man. Come on, man.
Yep. Go ahead. Read that.
This is the book of Jeremiah, chapter 50, verse 33. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the children of Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together.
Northern kingdom and southern kingdom. All Israel were oppressed together. Come on.
And all that took them captives held them fast. They refused to let them go.
They refused to let us go because they know that if they let us go, like we read in Judith, all right, that they will become a reproach. So here you're reading. He says, hey, you got to magnify these differences. He said fine hair and coarse hair. So he's talking about northern kingdom and southern kingdom. All right. Or as tall or short. Now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that this trust is stronger than trust and envy stronger than adulation, respect or admiration. The black slave receiving this indoctrination shall carry on and will become self-refueling and self-generating for hundreds of years, maybe thousands. That goes into they will not let us go.
Indoctrination. That's why they won't let us go, because they had to continue to indoctrinate us. You can only indoctrinate somebody if you have rule over them.
Right. And what you're reading here with William Lynch is covered in the two verses that we read in Judith. Just, it doesn't go into this detail. Because they tell you that that's what they must do, but you think that they just said that and didn't have a plan?
Hey, which tells you what? They know the Bible.
Right.
It came from
right.
there.
Only Negroes make a plan, make a goal, and have no plan for it.
Right.
Only we do stuff like that. We talk and talk, and then we don't do anything about it. You think they said what they said in Judith and they didn't have a plan of action? This was the plan of action.
He just said it for thousands of years. They were thinking ahead. We don't think that far, man. We think as far as our money takes us.
No.
They don't think that way, man. They think as far as their rulership is going to take.
We think.
Notice that. He said thousands of years.
We think to Friday.
To Friday. Payday.
Payday. Friday night.
At the liquor store. Buy some hay.
That's it. We think till Friday. So it says, now that you have a list of differences, I shall give you an outline of action. But before that, I shall assure you that distrust is stronger than trust and envy stronger than adulation, respect, or admiration. The black slave receiving this indoctrination shall carry on and will become self-refueling, meaning you don't got to, you know how like you put a basketball on a thing and you got to spin it and then you got to go back to create momentum so you can get 7, 8, 9, 10 spinning? He said, you don't got to do that. He goes, we're going to create the Negro, and we're going to create that Negro mentality, and it's going to be a self-refueling and a self-generating mindset.
That means they ain't never going to have to do anything again once they get this down to perfection.
For hundreds of years, maybe thousands.
Yep.
Hey, and you know what else? When he's saying up here, he says they have an outline of action before that, but he's telling you, I shall assure you distrust is stronger than trust and envy stronger than adulation. That's why COINTELPRO, the FBI and stuff, they're an organization that is blameless. They'll try to go in and sow seeds of discord, schisms, distrust. They're getting it from this playbook, and they just use modern mechanisms to employ this ancient outline. That's what they do, because he says those things are stronger than the other. That's why you can have somebody that will have so much respect for a leader in Israel and then sow a seed of doubt in them because they know the scriptures. They know what the sisters say. Look, the scripture says a vain opinion will overthrow their judgment. Yeah, let's just insert that somehow. Let's just create that little bit of doubt, and you're going to start to see them scatter.
The hell is this?
So he says, don't forget, you pitch the old black male versus the young black male, and the young black male against the old black male. You must use the dark-skinned slaves versus the light-skinned slaves. And I know traditionally we bring this out to say the lighter skin, right, high yellow Southern Kingdom, and the darker Southern Kingdom. The modern take on this is that BS that you see that, oh, they too light, they ain't Israel. Totally overlooking the knowledge in here that we are the people of the book with all the stuff that we're bringing out. So he says, put the old versus the young, put the young against the old, the dark skin versus the light skin, and the light skin versus the dark skin. You must use the female versus the male. And that thing has exploded with this feminist movement. The male versus the female. You must also have a white overseer who distrusts all blacks.
That's yeah, you know why? You know why, man? You know why? Because you may get that little, that Esau that kind of gets some type of empathy.
Yep.
All right, nah, you got to get the one that, you know what? You got to get that Uncle Buford right. Dude, man. You know, man? You got to get that real red, I don't give a damn, Edomite.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, and that's how you get the understanding that you can't trust any of these presidents, because as it evolves and they give you Kamala and they gave you Barack and whoever else, remember, that goes back to the Trick Daddy thing. They may on the outside look like us, but in all respects and intentions and purposes, they have their mind. They have their master's
mind. You know
what?
That's heavy what you just said, because, again, that just disproves that vote or die makes no damn sense, because they're going to put the person as the president that feels like that taskmaster.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly
it. Don't matter if it was Obama. It don't matter if it was Jose. That whoever come president, bro, it don't matter. But they already know that person's philosophy and thought process is of that taskmaster right now. Dude, this is they're telling you right there this is their strategy. This book wasn't supposed to be for us.
Nope.
I bet you don't find this in the Black History section.
Hey, this is like when they found the codes to decipher the German secret codes during World War II for the U-boats and all that. Like, wasn't there a movie like that?
With McConaughey,
they had to try to find the code so they could decipher when the subs were attacking, because the Germans was destroying the Allies.
Oh, that was U-571.
Yeah, and it was about trying to find
Das Boot.
Yeah,
Das Boot.
Yeah,
that was the German version.
That was the version. And then they did U-571. I think McConaughey was in it.
Yep.
Right. So what we've gotten here is that intel. But guess what? We're so reprobate. We're so subverted that even with this intel, we still fail to unify. Even with this, and then you bring this out, and we still fail to unify. That's why two-thirds got to get cut off and die. That's why two-thirds got to get cut off and die. So he said, but it is necessary that your slaves trust and depend on us. This is why they'll do things and they'll talk about reparation. They'll do that commission that we read about. They'll say they're going to do something.
They'll march with you.
They'll march with you. Even individually, they'll take your side if there's a Karen or something like that.
Be a pastor and saying that agreeing that the blacks are the God's chosen.
Yep.
Listen.
A bunch of Edomites go on a video and say that they know they're Esau. They'll do that too.
Y'all really think that they really believe that thing? You got a call?
Let me finish this last line and we'll take the call. So it says, they must love, respect, and trust only us. Gentlemen, these kits are our keys to control.
You go. I refuse to let them go.
Use them. Have your wives and children use. That means even their little babies are demons. And they teach them some form or fashion of this. Never miss an opportunity. Never miss an opportunity. If used intensely for 1 year, the slaves themselves will remain perpetually distrustful.
Everlasting distrust.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey,
let's make a slave.
This is what we have seen going on, and even more so today.
Yep.
Hey, they went as far as going ahead and having Edomites run Black Lives Matter. What the hell is this? And are people buying that crap? Yo, 70% statistics show were Edomites in that whole thing, or are Edomites in that whole thing.
Damn.
Yo, that means that 7 out of 10 people causing chaos are Edomites.
Yep. Hey, so we got a caller. Gosh, it got hot in here. I don't know why
the
schedule.
It's crazy.
Bro, I don't know what's going on with this schedule. I don't know if people are touching it or what. Oh, my goodness.
The caller's on there.
Okay. Hey, caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Welcome to the Power Hour Plus.
What's happening? I'm Brian from Memphis. I'm gonna be on here about 30 seconds, and that's it. I'm watching the show. I'm enjoying it, man. I appreciate what y'all are doing. But I have a comment. If you watch Netflix, they have a series that played probably about 3 years ago. Very good. Super high ratings. It was off the chain. It was called The Get Down. Now,
we know about that. We know about that. We from the Bronx, man. The Get Down was showing us our youth.
Exactly, man. And that was my comment. They said the series was too expensive to make. That is not true. They took it off because it showed us living as one people. And they realized what they were doing. And that's why that was a great show. And that's my comment. I'm not going to stay on long. Bottom line, it showed that we were living as one people. They realized what it was doing, and they canceled the show, man. That's it. I appreciate y'all, man. And I was just calling in to make that comment.
Hey, all praises, man. Hey, that's a great comment because you're right. They had the budget already for season two. But they were like, nah. You see, but you got to understand something, brothers and sisters. Esau will put feelers out there. They'll put stuff out. Again, their thoughts are deep, man. They'll put stuff out to see the reception. And like the brother said, they started showing us living in the same conditions. Okay? And like Captain Joshua said, we experienced that thing, bro. No, I literally experienced everything in the Get Down. Okay? Raised in that whole thing. Okay? Doing DJ parties in abandoned buildings, the whole thing. All right? B Street. Okay? It's like I was supposed to be in that movie, by the way. My father didn't let me be in that movie. I was friends with Lee. Okay, for those of you that know,
B Street.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right. I remember.
Yeah, I was good friends with Lee, bro. All right, and Craig. It was a dude with the glasses and the Kangol and the Adidas suit. Anyway, I'm telling you, man, you're in the spirit, brother, man, because that's a very good point. They had the budget for the money's endless for them, man. They could have went ahead and did it. They were like, nah, okay, we proved that point. They're going to unite.
After they canceled that, they did a whole bunch of, like, expensive movies with special effects that they didn't even keep the series. So they could have kept it going. Right, because the main character was Northern Kingdom, and I think, I don't know if the mom's was whatever, but basically he was showing you, like, a dark-skinned Northern Kingdom, and he had different people in his set, like in his crew. The Get Down brothers, right? And it showed the unity. It showed how we lived in the same conditions and we were. See, that's why I always say, I think in the South somewhat, and definitely coming out into the West, is very different than what we experienced growing up in the North.
But his brother's from Memphis, so I'm surprised he's in the spirit,
right,
bro.
Right. Well, he saw the show. So
yeah.
So I always say this, that in New York, our schisms with Northern and Southern Kingdom have nothing to do with race. It has to do with stupid street stuff,
right,
like you read in the Willie Lynch. It isn't about the race. It's about other differences, envy, different things like that. We grew up together. We were in the same hoods. We went through the crack epidemic together. All that
heroin
stuff.
Heroin epidemic.
All
and
that
you name
stuff.
It, we were there.
All that stuff. The Get Down. They might not even keep it in their queue anymore. But it's an excellent show. And for you dudes that's into hip-hop, it goes into like the birth of hip-hop while disco was kind of fading.
Right. That's exactly what it is, right?
So, because we know hip-hop started in the Bronx.
Right. Boogie Down. Holla.
Right. Now you're going to have mad people come in. Nah.
Nah. People that know hip-hop. And it was called hip-hop. It wasn't rap.
Right. It was called hip-hop, not rap. Exactly. Yeah.
You rapped.
Get Down is excellent.
To hip-hop. Right.
The Get Down is excellent. Hey, so let's jump into the video here. We didn't even get into the video. It is, I guess, Cuba's going to be two parts. Well, three. Because I don't want to spoil Saturday, but
nah, you're not gonna spoil. You're not gonna spoil because this is gonna go perfect for him. Because I'm looking at it from a whole. I'm gonna talk about it from a whole different angle.
Yeah, because you're addressing what's going on.
You're building. This is perfect. This is the spirit, bro.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So we're gonna go forward in time. We're gonna go back in time. All that. All right. As we deal with Cuba. So I'm almost of a certainty looking at the time. We may have to go.
It is what it is.
We may have to go to
hip hop don't start. That's right, Jabari.
We may have to go to. We'll see. Go ahead.
Are you a communist?
Well, wait for the history. The history will say what we are.
Cassie was no joke.
Hey, stop.
Yeah,
you want to know what's heavy about that? I'm going to try to challenge you as we go through this, while we speak political things, man, because if politics is ever ingrained in any Northern Kingdom country, it's in Cuba. It's heavy when it comes to Cuba. Their fate became less like Puerto Rico. See, Puerto Rico's became what they really intended, which was resource. And that's what they wanted in Cuba as well. But because you had some revolutionary spirits there that prevented that, it became politicized more than anything else and probably more popular than any other. I mean, there's movies about the Cuban Missile Crisis. The X-Men even featured it with the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Sure did.
They inserted themselves in there that it was really one of the mutants that was controlling things to make people, to make them have that thing go
on. That's how they make it seem fantasy.
I challenge you to try not to look at this through Esau's lens.
Right.
All
right?
Because what I'm going to tell you about some of these guys that we're going to go over that America calls dictators, right? And I'm not saying Fidel was a good guy, right? We have a little insight into Cuba because we were in Cuba. Did I post the Cuban pictures? I wanted to show those too. I don't think I posted those.
No.
I'm going to post them in a minute. I am not going to purport to know every dynamic that was in Cuba, right? I didn't live there. I have to sift through the information that we have. And a lot of times the information that we get is skewed because we're in America.
And it's communist, right? So
right.
So they're going to, right.
It's a negative connotation when you read that. So that's why I say I challenge you as we watch this. I know some people who are of Cuban descent and may have lived through it, may be upset. Fidel at one time was a good man with good intentions.
Yes, he was.
All right?
Yes.
And for a time, I want to show you that with the economic stuff. For a time, Cuba was thriving under Fidel. For a time. For a little time. It wasn't really until the 90s, the early 90s, that it started to devolve into the economic crisis that they have now and what's going on and what we saw when we were there. Even Fulgencio, right, Bautista, for a time, he was popular and good. And then things changed, right? And not all men – that's what happens when you don't have the Bible. I'll just put it like that. But I challenge you. I don't want it to seem like I'm praising this man. I know it's a hot topic, especially – I mean, I've known some Cubans that they're very defensive about it. But I challenge you to look at this, even though it's a politically charged thing, not through the lens of politics, all right, as we kind of go through some of this stuff and realize who the catalyst was. Much like many of these countries when we go through, you're going to see influences of America that drove a lot of the decisions that these guys made. All right, so go ahead.
I came from Cuba when I was 10 years old on a freedom flight in October of 1969.
Stop. I want to point something out. She's Cuban. She's from Cuba. She came here on a freedom flight in 1969. And most of you would look at her and think that she's an Edomite. All right?
The hell is this?
She's a Cuban refugee. Okay? So she's from the tribe of Manessa. Okay? Go ahead.
Inside my heart, I was broken. I had been separated from everything I loved. The place that I loved, and the people that I loved. The Cubans are, for the most part, political refugees. And even when you cite all of these economic reasons why they're here, behind it, when you really dig deep, is a political reason. The U.S. and Cuba have had this history. And all of the immigration has to do with that history and the role that the United States has played in Cuban affairs.
Stop. And it's not exclusive. It's not exclusive to Cuba. That's one theme as we go through all these countries through the vein of the Harvest of Empire, is that the immigration was driven by U.S. involvement in all of these countries, all of it. They won't just, like the sister from Guatemala said, most people have no idea why we come here. And those who do think they have an idea, it's the wrong idea.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand because it is this dirty stuff that they don't want you to know, because they want you to have this idealism and this nationalism in that America's so great, that America's so great. Go ahead.
Navy warships are a common sight in Havana Harbor.
The treaty ending the Spanish-American War has given the United States the right to intervene in Cuban affairs.
Stop.
To protect them.
We're going to go back. He says the treaty with the Spanish-American War gave the United States the right to interfere in Cuban affairs. This is a propaganda video from the early 1900s after they defeated the Spanish in the Spanish-American War, blowing up the, oh, look how great America's coming in to do this stuff. They said the treaty gives them the right to come in and deal with another sovereign nation's affairs.
Just like the treaties gave them the right to overthrow GAD.
Yep. Yep.
That they didn't follow. Well, 500 treaties.
How is this?
Not honored.
Right. Just to see how diabolical this man. I'm telling you, when we bring these scriptures out that describe who this man is, we cannot look at them with one single event in history most times as the catalyst behind it. It's a repeating, repetitive thing, okay? It's a repeating, repetitive thing. Go ahead.
Or has given the United States the right to intervene in Cuban affairs to protect American investment on the island. A favorite port of call, our young sailors call friendly Havana a good liberty town.
The United States would occupy particular countries, basically rewrite the laws, train a new military, and then groom local dictators.
Stop.
So
he said this was their MO after the Spanish-American War, all right, all the way up through now, till today. They said they would typically occupy, right? So now they don't really occupy because of the appearances of international laws and boundaries now. But he says they would rewrite the laws, right? That's in the beginning where he says it gives them the right to intervene in there. And this wasn't exclusive to Cuba. This is a thing. This is their modus operandi, all right? This is their MO on how they roll. And remember, with the Monroe Doctrine, all right, remember for those of you who watched that show, right, if you didn't, look up the Monroe Doctrine and read it. It's their driving thing that drives what they call foreign policy now in the United States. Back then it was called the Monroe Doctrine. And that's the foundation of it till this day, all right? And it's that they have the right because they're pompous, right? They see themselves like they are God, right? And they sit on the mount of God's people. And they believe that they have that right in this side of the world, and not just a right, but a responsibility to police and civilize and rule and bring their doctrine and their agenda to all these countries. All right? That's their thing. Go ahead.
In essence, carry out American policy.
So stop.
And turn.
Notice what he said. And this is where I say I want you to look at this different. When we talk about some of these leaders in these countries, right? And I'm not saying some of them didn't do terrible things, all right? It says they would install dictators. And if you really listen to what I said, they would install dictators. A democratic, supposedly government that wants democracy in all nations installs dictators. Dictators is synonymous with communism or socialism. The democratic nation installs socialist and communist leaders that look like their people. It's the trick baby thing, right? That look like their people. That's from there. And they install them because those dictators will enforce their policies until they don't. And then when they don't, they go and support insurgencies and proxy wars to overthrow them so they can put another dictator in. That's how they roll, over and over and over. That's why when Ahmadinejad calls them the devil, right, and Chavez was with it too, right, because they're like real friendly when they would be at the UN meetings and stuff, right? They would be there together. He would say it. They were like, yo, America's the devil. Y'all looking at us like we bugged out and we off. You don't understand the depths of what these people do.
Yeah, they're just trying to protect
us. That's right.
The damn devil.
Right, yeah, the Shav Iran too, right? I'm in Dimitriab from?
Yeah, he's from Iran.
He's from Iran,
but
right?
The Shav Iran was the puppet that America put in.
Right. Yep. So go ahead, play it.
A new military and then groom local dictators who, in essence, carry out American policy and turn over their countries for exploitation. Cuba was independent, but it was independent under the tutelage and control of the United States.
So you hear that? So it's a farce. They were claiming independence, but it was under the tutelage and control of the United States. Go ahead.
Fulgencio Batista was the most powerful figure throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and through most of that period functioned as a virtual dictator, always supporting and facilitating additional penetration of the Cuban market by American companies.
So stop. Notice what he said. He was popular and he remained in power because he was always supporting additional penetration by private U.S. companies into the Cuban market. As we continue to go over this show with each country that we touch, this is always what they do, is to establish these companies that are basically these powerhouses to this day, these corporations that nobody could really fight against.
Hey, and that's what they were trying to do with Pedro Albizu Campos. You best believe if he would have went with their doctrine, with what they wanted, he would have been a president. He would have been a dictator in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
That was the offer.
That was the offer.
Right. It was the offer. And here's the other thing. This is why the Italian mafia, they always laughed at them, at the government. Because they were like, yo, they're hypocrites. Because all we're doing is exactly what they do. This is mafia stuff right here.
Right. Yeah. The real mafia, the you want to talk about OG?
The real gangsters.
All right. You want to talk about OG? It's the United States and driven by their Monroe Doctrine. All right. That's the real gangsters.
Right.
Come on. Hey, meddling in other nations' business. Exactly. Like you read in Habakkuk, right? They don't keep it at home. Come on. And this place ain't even their home either.
There's no doubt that the level of repression of the Batista regime sparked widespread discontent among the population and united all of the people to overthrow his rule.
Castro.
Yo creo que los días más felices de mi vida fueron precisamente los de la caída de Batista.
Okay, so stop. So Fulgencio Batista is who he's talking about, and he's saying they're showing Fidel now because Fidel's revolution was to overthrow him. Now, how could Fidel be the same thing that Batista was, right? And I'm going to read a little bit about Batista so you can understand that it's a propaganda. I'm not saying these guys didn't do bad things. They did. They sold out for money. They sold out for that support, right? But notice how the narrative changes, right? So let me go ahead and just read this, right? I'm going to read a little bit of context to the Cuban Revolution. So pull that up first. Not Fulgencio yet. Fulgencio. The Cuban Revolution, all right, was an armed revolt conducted by communist Fidel Castro and his fellow revolutionaries, 26th of July movement, and its allies against the military dictatorship of President Fulgencio Batista. The revolution began in July 1953 and continued sporadically until the rebels finally ousted Batista on 31 December 1958, replacing his government. 26 July 1953 is celebrated in Cuba as the Day of the Revolution, Día de la Revolución. The 26th of July movement later reformed along Marxist-Leninist lines, becoming the Communist Party of Cuba in October of 1965. So now, let's read a little bit about Fulgencio, all right? So this is him. You saw him in the documentary, right? So it says, Fulgencio Batista y Saldivar, he was born Ruben Saldivar, was a Cuban military officer and politician who served as the elected president of Cuba from 1940 to 1944 and as its U.S.-backed military dictator from 1952 to 1959. So he was elected from 40 to 44, served a term, and then somehow in 1952 he wound up becoming a U.S.-backed military dictator, meaning it was a military coup that took away the government and he installed himself with the United States support. So they talk this communist, this socialist, and all this other stuff. They're the ones that put the communists and the socialists in power, right, at least in the Western Hemisphere, right? So it says he was that dictator before being overthrown during the Cuban Revolution. Batista initially rose to power as part of the 1933 revolt of the sergeants. Now, what's interesting with Batista is that he was a U.S.-backed military dictator, but they did not propagandize and demonize him like they did Fidel. What they were upset was Fidel actually was successful in taking down their man.
Yep.
So their only recourse was then to demonize Fidel. And like
this.
I said, Fidel did go bad. There were some things that we heard under his regime that did go bad. But his thing, remember, people were behind him. The guy told you today, that when we go back to the thing, he says that it was the happiest day when Fidel won and they took down Batista, right? So he's letting you know that how come they weren't referring to this guy as a dictator?
Right.
Because he was their guy. He was
Freedom!
Their guy, right? And Fidel said no more. And he actually won that revolution. So Batista initially rose to power as part of the 1933 revolts of the sergeants, which overthrew the provisional government of Carlos Manuel de Cespedes y Quesada. He then appointed himself chief of the armed forces with the rank of colonel and effectively controlled the five-member pentarchy. That functioned as the collective head of state. He maintained this control through a string of puppet presidents until 1940, when he was himself elected president of Cuba on a populist platform. He then instated the 1940 Constitution of Cuba and served until 1944. So here is the part where you got to be able to connect the dots. Remember, they referred to him as the president in 1940, 1944, and it wasn't until 1952 that he became the U.S.-backed military dictator. And this is the part that this stuff is not going to tell you when you read it, but based on what we've been going over and with the School of the Americas, the key thing here is where did he go after his first term as president?
So,
after finishing his term, Batista moved to Florida, returning to Cuba to run for president in 1952. So he has 8 years, right? 8 years in America, and all of a sudden he goes back and is able to do a military coup to take over power. So something happened in those 8 years that he was here in the United States. And I guarantee you it had to do with the School of the Americas. When he was a resident of Florida, he went and he trained in Georgia. That's where the School of the Americas is. All right. And he picked up his doctrines. He picked up the agenda. They gave him his mission and implanted it in him.
But he didn't pick it up because he went to Florida and said, hey, you know what? I think I want to learn this stuff. No. They already knew what he was capable of doing when he was in Cuba.
Yes.
They understood from his first term that they had somebody on their hand. Man, they do a diligent search, man. They knew this dude's spirit. They knew that this was their man. Trust me. They ain't going to invest no money in nobody in those School of the Americas if they ain't going to get a profit out of it.
Hey, and remember, it says that he was famous from the 30s because he basically – He knew how to basically rule by proxy from then, because they said they called them puppet presidents, but he was basically the head military guy for the presidents before him. So they saw, hey, this guy, if we groom him a little bit, if we can sell him on this, we can get in there and penetrate the Cuban market more.
Yeah, you don't think that they had conversations with him on the side when he was the top guy for the president?
Right.
They already knew, man. They know these things, man. They know who they could go ahead manipulate.
Yep. Right. And we're definitely not going to be able to get to it today, but when I get to the book, you're going to read how, and maybe, I don't remember if they showed in the clips that we're watching, Cuba's heyday was kind of during his time, before Fidel took power.
Everybody was making money there. Remember,
yes.
you see that scene in The Godfather.
Yes, and we're going to read about the ties with the mafia, right? So speaking of The Godfather, you speak about the ties with the mafia and all that stuff like that, that goes with it, right? So you'll see, again, it's this economic rape, this cultural rape of our people that they do. So after finishing his term in 1944, Batista moved to Florida, returning to Cuba to run for president in 1952, facing certain electoral defeat, right? So they told him, go back and run, but he wasn't going to win. So he knew he was going to lose, kind of like what Trump tried to do. And he led a military coup against President Carlos Prio Socaras that preempted the election. Back in power and receiving financial, military, and logistical support from the United States government, But you never hear them demonize this guy. All you hear is Fidel, Fidel, Fidel. Because Fidel wasn't playing ball with them. And again, we might not get to that today, but it's all right. We're setting it up. We're setting up the juice, right? You're getting the appetizers, right? The 16-ounce prime ribeye is going to come out later, all right?
Drinks to hold
on. You're going to get the full course meal here, right?
What is it? What's the biggest course meal?
The main course.
No. How many courses?
Oh, I don't know. Is it seven? I think I've seen. I don't know if you did seven. Right. I don't know. I ain't that fancy. Throw it all on a paper plate. One course. That's how I roll. But right, So you get everything, right? So you get the salad, you get the bread, you get the soup, right? Then you get like a little small plate. Then you get the main entree.
Yeah, you get nine forks on your table.
Right.
He needs some milk.
Nine forks, three spoons, two knives. What the hell is this?
You know what to do with all of that, but you get mad. You just be like,
they try to take your fork. Mm-mm. One is good.
Yeah, one is good.
We need to go to etiquette school.
Nah, I'm good.
So he said, back in power and receiving financial, military, and logistical support from the United States government, Batista suspended the 1940 Constitution, which he installed. He installed the 1940 Constitution.
Yeah, but
so now he's coming back with a different ideology.
Yeah, what he saw is ideology.
Right. And revoked most political liberties, including the right to strike. But they didn't call him a communist. They never addressed him as a communist. And I might be mistaken in reading any of this from what I read. They never refer to him that way. They never do.
No.
But they did to Fidel. They did to Fidel. Now, they were both guilty of atrocities that they committed, all right, against their own people eventually. But they never, just to show you the BS, that's why I say I caution you to look at this from a different perspective. And I guarantee you there's a lot of Cubans that don't understand the extent of the U.S. involvement in what happened in their country.
Understand one thing, right? Castro understood what could happen to him if he didn't treat, I'm not justifying anything he did with his people, but he understood they could overthrow me. I have to have my foot on their neck. Once you get into that circle, you can't get out of it.
Yeah.
Because he understood what he did to Batista.
You know, that's a great point that you bring out. That's a great point. It's not to justify
That's our people, right?
But he said, if I don't have my foot on their neck, they're going to find somebody that they could support to
overthrow. That's why he had many doubles.
And they did, because, again, we're not enough time today. The Bay of Pigs was exactly that.
Yep.
The Bay of Pigs was exactly that. It was 1,400 former, what they call refugees, that they trained and sent them back to try to invade and overtake Cuba.
Mm, kind of sounds like what they try to do to Maduro.
Right.
In Venezuela.
Yes, right. Or what they wound up doing just now
to
your man
Haiti.
In Haiti. Yep. Sister Sarai said it is seven.
Oh, yeah, she knows. She knows that stuff. Yeah, she would know. Thanks, Sarai.
She's cracking up. She said it is seven.
I knew it was a lot. Too many forks for me to even cut fat. I didn't even know seven forks as
right,
a kid.
Right. Seven courses.
The whole house. I'm talking about the family.
We didn't
have seven forks.
We're giving you the seven courses with Cuba. We're giving you the seven courses.
We ate soup with a fork.
Right. You said we ate soup with a fork.
How poor we were. Damn, man. That's terrible. Soup with a fork. Well, I guess that's why we always drink it.
Yeah, so you drink it after.
Anyway. Back in power and receiving financial, military, and logistical support from the United States government, Batista suspended the 1940 Constitution and revoked most political liberties, including the right to strike. He then aligned with the wealthiest landowners who owned the largest sugar plantations and presided over a stagnating economy that widened the gap between rich and poor Cubans. This was the MO that they sent him back with. This is what they told him. This is what you're going to do.
That's Willie Lynch.
And we will ensure. Hey, you know what they did to him? That's Willie Lynch. You know what they did to him? Like Satan tried to do to Christ. They took Fulgencio and they said, unto us it is given to give you the whole country
exactly
back.
What they did.
We'll set you up as ruler. We'll give you money. We'll bring in industry and commerce. Your island's going to boom. And trust me, we will eventually love you for what you're going to do.
The hell is this?
Just do it like this. That's what he did. So they said eventually it reached a point where most of the sugar industry was in U.S. hands and foreigners owned 70% of the arable land. Same thing. We read this in Guatemala. We read this in Puerto Rico. As such, Batista's repressive government then began to systematically profit from the exploitation of Cuba's commercial interests by negotiating lucrative relationships both with the American mafia, who controlled the drug, gambling, and prostitution businesses in Havana, and with the large U.S.-based multinational companies who were awarded lucrative contracts. The mafia and the U.S. companies are the same thing. And the U.S. government, when it comes to
freedom,
they're the same thing.
Yeah, because he still felt the same way. We got to keep our foot on the mafia's neck because they're doing the same thing we're doing.
Right. Bro, you're talking about only 70 years ago that this was going on.
Nothing, bro.
Hey, this is not, this is, the people are still alive that had a hand in this.
Oh,
all right?
Yeah, you're right.
So it says they were together in there. So it was a plan. And like Cap said, if you watch The Godfather, there's a whole scene around that. What, Meyer Lansky?
It's supposed to be Meyer Lansky. Hyman Roth is supposed to be Meyer Lansky. Right.
Right. Hyman Roth is supposed to be the real Meyer Lansky. Hyman Roth is based on Meyer Lansky, who's the real mafia guy over here.
Mm-hmm.
It says, to quell the growing discontent amongst the U.S., amongst the populace, which was subsequently displayed through frequent student riots and demonstrations, Batista established tighter censorship of the media while also utilizing his bureau for the repression of communist activities, secret police. So while he was operating in a communist fashion, he had a bureau that was to repress communist activities.
The hell is this?
And it was them saying, so what Fidel really did and why they got pissed off was he took some of their playbook. Mm-hmm. Right, because when you read about Fidel, it tells you that he helped in revolutions in Colombia, other countries.
Well,
right?
Che Guevara.
And yes, and he was close with
okay.
Che. He
saw the oppression where he was living in South America.
Yes, yes. So he fought in those.
Yeah.
So he picked up the intel from the stuff they were doing there too.
Saint Pedro Albizu Campos.
Right. So they were tight, but Fidel did it more aggressively.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Albizu Campos was trying to do it like the way many of our politicians do today.
Right.
By getting elected to
right.
government and thinking
right.
they can affect
right.
change.
Castro was like, hell with
Castro
that.
Castro said, no. I just need to be the government in order
right.
to employ
right.
this
That's the
thing.
Only way we're
right.
going
to
get this thing.
I don't need to be in the government. I need
myself.
To be the government.
Right.
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 So he says, so he had this bureau for the repression of communist activities, secret police, to carry out wide-scale violence, torture, and public executions. And they told him this was the cost. They said, if you do this, right? So this doesn't make him right, right? This is where it goes bad. These murders amounted in 1957 as socialist ideas became more influential. So he's a U.S.-backed dictator, and socialist ideals are cropping up. So he became more influential. Many people were killed, with estimates ranging from hundreds to about 20,000 people killed.
The hell is this?
Catalyzing the resistance to such tactics for 2 years, December 1956 to December 1958, Fidel Castro's 26th of July movement and other rebelling elements led an urban and rural-based guerrilla uprising against Batista's government, which culminated in his eventual defeat by rebels under the command of Che Guevara and the Battle of Santa Clara of New Year's Day 1959.
You see that scene in The Godfather?
Yes, yes.
Remember when Fredo tries to dip? What happened? That's Batista. He's giving his speech that he's resigning.
Mm-hmm.
And all hell starts breaking loose then.
Yep. Yep. Hey, right. Exactly.
Yep.
And and everybody wanted to get out because they knew what was about to
happen. He goes, Fredo, I'm your brother.
Bruh.
Hey, if you haven't seen The Godfather, you don't know. That's classic, bro. That's classic cinema. So Che actually wound up helping him in the Cuban Revolution. So, like, when we were in Cuba, you would see stuff for Che, too. Che's held in esteem by Fidel because he helped him overthrow Batista, right? And by overthrowing Batista, what he was really overthrowing was the evil that was the United States government's involvement in Cuba at that time.
That's right!
Batista immediately fled the island with an amassed personal fortune to the Dominican Republic. So he left to the Dominican Republic, and we're going to talk about DR.
Oh, man.
We're going to get DR, too. Where strongman and previous military ally Rafael Trujillo held power. Another a dictator installed by the United States in the Dominican Republic.
He actually confirmed he went to the School of the Americas.
Yes, he confirmed.
That's confirmed.
He confirmed it. So Batista fled there. Batista eventually found political asylum in Oliveira Salazar's Portugal, where he first lived on the island of Madeira and then in Estoril. He was involved in business activities in Spain and was staying there in Guadalamina at the time of his death from a heart attack, August 6, 1973. Heart attack. Probably at that point, they probably put some cyanide or something in his drink or something like that, right? I don't need to read about the coup. Okay, let's just touch base on his first presidency. It's a small paragraph. Go all the way down. It's his first presidency. Batista, supported by the Democratic Socialist Coalition, right, which included Julio Antonio Mella's Communist Party, defeated Grau in the first presidential election under the new Cuban constitution in the 1940 election and served a four-year term as president of Cuba, the first and to this day only non-white Cuban in that office, right? Because they're just talking about the lighter-skinned ones that have held the office. Batista was endorsed by the old Communist Party of Cuba, which at the time had little significance. So he was literally in a communist party and America supported him as a communist to be their guy in Cuba.
Hey, it's like they call a shop out of Shada Syria, the regime.
Right. Right.
They always put a negative twist on it. The Iranian regime.
Right.
The Syrian regime.
Right.
Well, you're a regime too.
Right.
No, they call themselves administration.
Right. It's an administration or their cabinet, right? Or the government.
Come on, man.
But it's a regime when it's somebody that they don't like. Right. That's what I'm saying. They demonize stuff. Remember, Fidel overthrew evil Americans when he took over.
He's just right.
Right. It became something else. And you know, we'll get as much as we can, and then we'll follow on with it. So, Batista was endorsed by the old Communist Party of Cuba, which at the time had little significance and no probability of an electoral victory. This support was primarily due to Batista's labor laws and his support for labor unions, with which the communists had close ties. In fact, communists attacked the anti-Batista opposition, saying Grau and others were fascists and reactionaries. During this term in office, Batista carried out major social reforms and established numerous economic regulations and pro-union policies. So he was a good president during his first term. But then he goes to Florida and 8 years later comes back and kills 20,000 of his own people while supporting American interests there. He's like the Manchurian candidate, bro. Like, they activated him.
Right.
Cuban entered World War II on the side of the Allies on December 9th, 1941, declaring war on Japan 2 days after the attack on Pearl Harbor. On December 11th, the Batista government declared war on Germany and Italy. In December 1942, after a friendly visit to Washington, Batista said Latin America would applaud if the declaration by United Nations called for war with Francisco Franco's Spain, calling the regime fascist. So you can read more on your own with those links if you want. I got to talk about the relationship to organized crime. It is here. Okay. Let's go back to a little bit more of the documentary, and we can always come back to this. All right. Let's go back to the clips. We'll come back and remind me to talk about the military coup and his second presidency details. All right.
La idea de que llegaba la libertad a Cuba y que todos íbamos a participar en la construcción de un país.
So he said when Fidel took power, they were happy because they said they were all going to participate cleaning up what Batista had did, basically. Go ahead.
A las pocas semanas, a mí me repugnaba el espectáculo de los fusilamientos y de los juicios.
So he says eventually it divulged into like executions and trials. He says it was like a circus, right? Come on.
Eran unos verdaderos circos.
There is a limit to what the United States and self-respect can endure. That limit has now been reached.
Los estudiantes y los campesinos empezaron un proceso de rebelión contra la nueva dictadura. Había una persona infiltrada en el grupo que comunicó a la policía política lo que estábamos haciendo.
Hey, you heard that stop. So he says there was somebody in there.
A 20 años de cárcel.
These guys were, they basically, so they were trying to revolt against Fidel. And he says that Fidel, which again, he has experience when we read about him, you'll see, he infiltrated their groups and they reported him to the police.
Again, because what were they trying to do? The same thing that Castro did to Bautista.
That's exactly what
I mean, once you start, it's a thing that can't stop.
That's exactly what it was.
It can't stop. When you really think about it, because what were they going to do when they got in there? They talk a good game. Right, our people talk a good game. Oh, we're going to do, because Fidel did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Once you're in there, you realize you can't get out.
You've got to keep the foot on the neck. If not, you're going to be overthrown, and they're going to do the same thing. No, it's a circle you can't get out of, man.
Right. Absolutely. That's exactly it. And that's why I say you can't discount America's involvement, all right?
No.
If you look at that through the lens of titles, names that they put, fascists, socialists, communists, all this stuff, you're buying into the – you're drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, right? So go ahead. So they got caught.
Como yo era menor de edad.
Sentence of 20 years, but as a minor.
Pues me trasladaron a una cárcel de menor rigor hasta que cumpliera los 18 años. Y de esa cárcel me pudo escapar.
So he escaped. Probably arranged by the United
States. Lo recuerdo como si fuera hoy. Y esto hace 50 años. Yo estaba seguro de que regresaríamos antes de dos años.
So he thought he would return in 2 years. He still had friends.
La emoción más fuerte que yo sentía era el compromiso con los estudiantes presos, con mis compañeros que habían quedado en la cárcel.
In 1961, Castro's army defeated an invasion of 1,400 Cuban exiles trained and equipped by the CIA.
Stop.
The Bay of Pigs became an...
She was a disaster.
So we literally just read how Batista killed 20,000 Cubans. Right, was torturing them, whatever, allowing the U.S. to come in, and they wound up owning 70% of the land for the agriculture and all this other stuff, right? And somehow that was a bad thing. So now they went and they funded these guys who were against them, right? Which, if you think about it, some of these were probably guys that were pro-Batista, right, that escaped, and they've trained them, and they tried to invade Cuba. All right. And
yeah, because no, you're right about that. Because they had, you know, they found out that they had loyalties
right
to the Bautista, the previous regime. That's how Castro did,
mm-hmm.
And that's how you do when you're in. That's what Saddam did.
Yes.
Oh, you got loyalties to this. That's what the Ayatollah did. Oh, you got loyalties to the. Yo, that's how. Dude, it's a circle you can't get out of, man. No matter how you slice it, you're always looking over your shoulder.
Go ahead. Go ahead, keep playing.
An embarrassment for the United States and served to increase Castro's popularity on the island and around the world.
Right. So stop. So you have this guy talking about how jacked up it was, but they don't tell you what his alliances were. But he just told you that Fidel became ever more popular after fighting off the U.S. invasion on the island. So they would have you believe that a lot of the people there don't like the guy that's in power. They would have you believe that without anything to substantiate it. Mm-hmm. And again, I reiterate, I'm not saying Fidel didn't eventually do some of these things, but that was not the case at the outset. Even in speaking to people there, I'm telling you from speaking to people there while we were there, they said it, that when Fidel took power was a good thing for a while. And the thing that they point to, which we're not going to read today, right, was it's called the Special Period and the Comecon, which was the Council for Mutual Economic Assistance, was in the late 90s, in the early 90s, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they lost their economic access where they were still able to get power. And that's when the sanctions became crippling to them that the U.S. put on them, and they went into this deep economic dive.
Right, because they got embarrassed in the Bay of Pigs. That was totally embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Destroyed, so they had to come with the next thing. Remember, the Cold War was going on. Dude, there's a lot going on. See, people are ignorant, man. Yeah, you got to go deep into these things, man. You got to look how deep Esau's thoughts are, man. Yep. They think levels and levels and levels and levels ahead of the average person, man.
Yep. Yep. Go ahead.
Increase Castro's popularity on the island and around the world.
Boom. Terrible error del gobierno de los Estados Unidos lanzar una invasión a la que no estaban dispuestos a.
And he says they were not fully committed to supporting it. No, just do it. I'm just reading the thing. Respaldar.
Hey, stop one second. That's why you're going to notice. I don't know if you're going to cover it in any other parts. Okay, I'm going to touch on it on the Sabbath when I do the power hour, but Castro's MO always was, if you ain't with me, then go.
Yes.
And he would go ahead and dump him on America because he knew, yo, Castro was a very, very intelligent man. Make no mistake about it, bro.
He knows America inside and out, man.
Next week, because we only got like 10 minutes left on the show. Next week, we'll probably talk about it. It's in the book.
It's in there, right?
And he says he took the opportunity to not just have them go, but he also sent the deplorables, too.
The worst ones.
So he sent the worst ones. He said, So he said, y'all going to take them?
Yeah.
But we're gonna explore the dynamic when we read the book of how America was pro-Cubans until the Cold War died down. So only when it aligned with it. So no other immigrant group that was Northern Kingdom or so-called Hispanic Latino got the type of things and perks that they were giving Cubans because supposedly they were fleeing communism. So since they were against communism, it was the height of the Cold War, they rolled out welfare, public service programs, all types of stuff for the Cubans that came. Until the Cold War started to cool, and they started to send the black Cubans and the criminal Cubans and all that stuff like that.
Yeah, Tony Montana.
Right, the Tony Montanas and all that. Hey, I was looking for the scene.
Okay,
so
Cowboys.
I was looking for the scene so that we could show it. Maybe we'll show it next week, where he says, I'm a political prisoner from Cuba.
Yeah.
I want my human rights like Jimmy Carter says.
Yep.
Because it was under Jimmy Carter's administration. And it did. It got wild. When you see Scarface, it explores the side of sending criminals over. And that was Castro just ridding the island of those people. And that's what helped propel Reagan to the presidency, because it was on an immigration platform. And ever since then, it's become a very strong anti-immigration platform for the Republicans since the 80s. So,
you wanted to show pictures?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to show the pictures from when we were there to let you know, like, again, I'm not saying that I purport that we're speaking to all of it, all right? We most certainly are not. But let me send the pictures. I got to send them.
So, basically, you got to understand, man, cap what out, all right? Castro had great intentions, obviously, right? Because he wanted to overthrow someone that was oppressing them. But again, like I said, I can't stress this enough, man. And y'all know, man, it's even when you're looking at it from a street perspective, right? When you're a gangster, you got to keep your neck on your people, bro. That's why in the movie Bronx Tale, what did they say? You'd rather be loved or feared.
Right?
Right? Same thing. And what ended up happening to him in Bronx Tale? The same dude that he killed, the son of the dude that he killed at the beginning of the movie came back for him. Okay, and that's what that life is all about. You got to constantly be looking over your shoulder, right. And you can't trust anybody.
Right.
If not, you're going to lose your power. It's just so that same analogy holds true with Esau today. They understand what's going to happen to them because the scripture says it's going to happen to them.
Right.
That's why, give me Revelation 13 real quick. You know what I want? We got to read it out. He that lead into captivity. They understand. Trust me, this is why they get angry when they see Negroes reading the Bible.
Right.
Go ahead.
The book of Revelation, chapter 13, verse 10.
Uh-huh.
He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity.
Uh-huh.
He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword.
Uh-huh.
Here is the patience and faith of the saints.
Here's the patience and faith of the saints who are the Israelites, you blacks and Native Americans. What is that saying there? Exactly what I'm saying here. All right? They understand that the same way you overtook a presidency, a leader, it's going to happen to you. The difference is, according to the Bible, that's it. That's in Book of Revelation.
Yes, sir.
Ain't nobody going to take over us ever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ever. We're going back to our rightful place of rulers the way it was always supposed to be.
That's right. That's right. All right. So, yeah, I sent the pictures. Let me know if you got them. We'll end with just showing some of the pictures here, and then we'll pick up next week with the Bay of Pigs, and we've got to read the rest about Fulgencio. So some of you who've known us for a while or whatever, but there might be newer people who don't know. Was it like 3 years ago now?
2017.
Almost 4 years, October, right? It was like October we went.
It was October.
Yeah. So October this year will be 4 years since we went. Only reason we haven't gone back is Trump came into office and it changed everything. So it wasn't easy to get back there anymore. So we actually went. So that's what I'm saying. We have some intel from the ground, from there, not from just Americans' history and American media of what they portray, what's going on over there.
That's right.
Captain Zeph and I, in particular, went a couple of days earlier to do, like, reconnaissance for camp spots and things like that. And we also went to, like, some of their museums that spoke about the revolution and things like that. So we had a whole bunch of different data on that. Did we ever do the documentary for Cuba? Yeah, that came out? No? Wow. The Cuba documentary never came out.
But I don't know if it was a full documentary.
Wow. As if I not dropped the ball on that, boy. Thanks. Anyway, so that was us standing outside the prison. The jail cell was too, because we got arrested when we were there for preaching. The jail cell was too small. So they basically just had a couple
This was after hours.
So they let us stand outside because we didn't all fit in the cell. And there was a couple prostitutes in the cell, I think.
Yeah, it was.
So they let us stand outside, but they had a couple cops there. So they arrested us. They arrested us when we were teaching.
Took
right?
our passports the whole
Took our passports,
yards,
right. So, you know, it's not that we were just chilling. Right. We couldn't go nowhere. They took our passports. We would have tried to.
Yeah, you see me? I'm mad.
Right? You're not free to go. Right?
It was hot as hell, but it's humid.
Oh, yeah. You could tell he was real pissed. Look
Freaking
at him.
Mad.
He was like, I can't believe this shit. I can't
We were supposed
to
go to dinner that night.
Yeah. Katsura. Yes, sir. That's why I said some people don't know about this. Yes, we went to Cuba to teach, and we were arrested in Cuba for preaching the gospel. And we were followed and surveilled after that. All right?
That's right.
And it wasn't so much that they were against the gospel. They did not like, because you're going to see in some of the pictures, they did not like the response the people had to us. And I'll tell you something. Bishop will tell you this out of his own mouth. To this day, there has not been any Northern Kingdom that he's seen that has responded like they did in Cuba
That's
to
true.
The word.
That's true. Man, they flocked. They flocked a lot. We had, man, it was crazy, man.
We got to get back.
Hey, it was so serious, man. They brought a damn 5-ton. Y'all that are in the military, no, it's a 5-ton truck filled in the back, man, with about 30 freaking army
personnel.
Yeah, because
they have like the city police, they have the country police, and then they have the military. And
they rolled the military.
The military rolled up on us with nightsticks, like 30, 40
feet. Nightsticks and rifles.
And rifles.
AKs. The AKs.
Yep. Yeah, man. So go ahead. Next picture. That was standing outside the freaking jail. What are you doing, Stoney? All right, that was me. I was on flyer post. All right. Go ahead. Oh, so where I'm standing, that's the corner.
Right.
In the
at about 1 o'clock.
In the foreground over there.
Yeah.
A little further down is where
the lady with the white pants is in the back.
Yeah, going down
towards
that
left.
Where she's walking towards? She's walking towards the jail.
Yeah.
That's where we didn't even realize.
We didn't even know there was a jail.
We set up over there. We set up over there because Bishop was like, nah, this is a good spot. He was like, this looks good, right? This plaza. It was not too far from where, because internet's not in their homes over there. So there's a plaza. There's a park that they go to. They call it the internet plaza.
Where they have Wi-Fi.
And where they had Wi-Fi. Where they had Wi-Fi. And we were
so
like a little. So it's a heavily congested area because everybody was going there for Wi-Fi. So we were, which is Wi-Fi. So we were a little further away. Go ahead. Those were us. All of us got arrested there. All right.
That was after we got locked up. We were just happy, bro.
And you see the face of consternation on Bishop Kanai is because I think we were heading to the airport and we weren't sure if they were gonna.
Oh, that's when we were leaving
the airport.
That's
yeah.
when we were leaving. Yeah,
that's when we were
yeah,
leaving.
Yeah.
So we were because they sent secret police to watch us at the hotel.
Everywhere we went,
from there on out, we were followed.
We couldn't video. We couldn't do nothing.
Yeah. All right. So that's camp, right? So Cap was holding down the camp. Look at the people there. Look at it. Tell me where you ever seen Northern Kingdom that deep, listening to the word.
Hey, and there weren't even a lot of scoffers out of that.
Hey, and look at our bishop, bro. Just
holding
the
sign.
Let me hold the camp sign.
Yep.
Y'all do
that's
what y'all
he
gotta
did the
do.
Whole time, man.
Let me hold the camp sign. Y'all do what you gotta do. Go ahead. And you see cake not turned there. Light, dark.
Yep.
But look at how crazy it was over there. There's another shot. Everybody was there. People recording. People. I mean, you know, you had some people questioning, but for the most part, let me tell you, the one thing none of them questioned was that image of Christ.
Nobody
right
questioned that.
You never see that with Northern Kingdom. None of them. They were like, yeah. Yeah, you know, are you ready for the battle when you bring out the depiction of Christ?
Oh, yeah.
Man, go ahead. Next. Look. People said, and it was deeper back. So, like, you had those were the ones in front. And further
yeah,
back.
Side to the right was where those.
And where those trees are, that's the Wi-Fi park. That's where the Wi-Fi is in that park. That's where the Wi-Fi is. Go ahead, next picture. So what we did was, Zeph and I, when we got there, I'm telling you, bud, let me tell you, some of y'all, it's not to puff ourselves up. We went there. This is Cuba. We didn't have nobody there. We didn't know who to.
We didn't know anybody.
We didn't know anybody there. Zeph and I got there like on a Sunday, and then everybody else was coming by Wednesday. And by Wednesday, we had secured drivers. We secured locations. Bro, like we went there like if we were like covert agents trying to set things up for everybody else. So
prison sucks over there.
These guys will ride or die with us, though, man. The drivers that we have, man. I pray Zeph got their number. When we got arrested, they waited.
Yeah, they did wait.
They
man.
Waited, bro.
Hey, they even gave them back. They were like, yeah. hey, you know, like they kind of stepped. They stuck up. For
yeah,
us,
they
man.
Stuck up for us a little bit. Yeah. We were there for hours. We were there for hours, and they waited for us, locked up in that hot. Oh, it was so freaking hot in that prison. We were hungry. Well, we were so hungry that we ate like their version of Italian food at the hotel, and it was probably the best meal we ever had because we got our freedom and we got to eat. Anyway, so we rented those classic cars like you think about with Cuba and stuff like
that.
That
car was nice.
And you could only put like three to the back, one in the passenger seat. So he basically, they were our guides. So we told them, look, we want to go someplace where there's this, that, or whatever so that we could go teach and whatnot. And they drove us all over the place.
Oh, mind you, that was day one, the camp.
We had to be right. creative after that. We had to go into the mountains.
Day. Yeah. After that, we were basically covert, like on flyer missions and stuff like that. Like we couldn't stay in the main downtown. So we wound up actually the freaking Christian pastor that told on us, that called the cops on us, because it was a Christian pastor that called the cops on us.
He was a scoffer.
He was a scoffer. He actually wound up coming and set us up to speak in two churches the following day. And he even brought some people to the hotel on Saturday so that we could try to teach them in the lobby. And then
they stopped we were recording.
Right. They told us that we couldn't teach them in the lobby.
It was shades,
stuff like that.
Shades,
yeah.
Shades and dressed in black.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the last picture? Oh, I threw that in there for. So this is the joke picture that they got. That's me down there. All right.
He was like, Christ, and I love you,
so,
man.
No.
Papa Dios.
So go up, zoom out. So, yes, they had this big statue of Cesar Borgia, which is near a port where cruise ships were stopping. This was before Trump. Obama had opened things up to go to Cuba. So I was reading an inscription on the thing to see what they were saying about Cesar. And Bishop and everybody now says that they almost lost me to white Jesus over there. So, yep. So, yeah, so and that's just some of the shots that we had of us in Cuba. And I really thought we had a documentary on it out. I don't recall if it went out or not. So,
bruh.
Anyway, all praises to
we
the
might.
Most,
you know what? We might have. I don't know.
I really want to go back. Bishop has been hot to go back. But it's of the Lord, man. Trump coming into power and all that stuff. I think you're going to see Biden's focused on some other things right now, but I think you're going to see a cooling over there. Cap's going to talk probably more about it on Saturday, what's going on over there now in the news with their protests and stuff like that, people taking to the streets. But Lord's will, we get back out there, man. That's a hot one.
Jesus.
That's a good one, man. Fabio Jesus with a beard. Because Fabio didn't have a beard. Yeah, this is Fabio Jesus with a beard.
Hey, I tell you straight, man. When we were locked up, we didn't know what was going to happen, man. I was already in my head getting myself. In my head, I was like, damn. I said, all right. They'll probably let me, like, you know, somehow get a message to the embassy to my wife. I said, you know, I just want to make sure I let her know where. How to access certain accounts and stuff like that. And then I said, yo, I literally started to resign myself to that. We might be detained.
Oh, I kind of.
I said, well, at least we together. I said, you know, I said, at least I'm not. I said this. I'm going to wind up with somebody, even if they separate us. I said, I'm going to wind up with somebody from here while we locked
hey,
up.
And then that man, they got us freaking food. And it was all pork.
Right.
And then he was laughing
that.
At us, looking at us. Like, you don't want? You don't want? We were like, nah. Yep. We don't.
Yeah, man. They went. Yeah. They went because we were there for a while. Like, the guy started warming up. Jeff and I went upstairs to talk to, like, the, what do you call the guy that's on duty at the desk? The desk sergeant or whatever.
Desk sergeant, yeah.
Yeah, so we went upstairs to talk to him. And, you know, he let us talk to him a little bit about the scriptures. And, you know, he was like, look, I'm a Christian or whatever. And he showed us his Bible. So after that, he took a little ease because what we were waiting for was the commander from the military to come to see if they could let us go. And that took hours and hours for them to come. So he went around the corner to get some. So let me tell you, without the pork, that thing was looking and smelling good because we were hungry as hell. It was like the moro that they do with the rice and the black beans.
Yeah, it had pork rinds in it.
And it had
the
egg.
Real pork
it had
rinds.
Hard-boiled,
the
it had hard-boiled egg. It looked good.
Oh, you saw eggs in that thing?
Yeah, there was eggs in it. Eggs. But then there was also chunks of pork in it. Damn. So there was like little pieces of pork and stuff in there. So we couldn't eat it. We couldn't eat it. That's why I said we ate that at time. Well, it was like such a relief. Oh, man. Anyway, listen. We want to keep doing more trips like that and stuff like that. You see us starting to hit these things. Remember, we're not near that 11th hour yet until you start to see Northern Kingdom wake up a mass like that. Bishop was recently covering that in one of the Sabbath classes, you know, not to make people comfortable and complacent, but to remind you that there's still a lot of work to be done. Make sure you support. All right. We always ask for your support, liking, sharing the show and spreading the word that way. But also the Booster Club, all right? It's up on the screen, iuic.fundraising@israelunite.org. You have no idea how much that helps us to be able to travel, not just for Northern Kingdom, but even the Southern Kingdom countries. The headway that we've made into some of these countries is because y'all have put your money where your mouth is and support the troops and going out to do these missions. So,
that's right!
You guys got anything else before I give them the... Make sure they tune
nah,
in.
Nah, man, tune in Saturday if you can, 11 a.m. Arizona time. I'm going to go ahead and hit everything Capo here, but from a whole different perspective. All right, but it's going to correlate with this as well. So
right.
It's going to correlate with what's going on today. It's going to include Haiti and a couple other things that are all intertwined together, and hopefully I'll have enough time. Y'all see it.
Right. Yeah, so that's exclusively on Facebook on the Power Hour page, all right? That's 11 a.m. Arizona time. Jump on that. Lord's Will next week, Lord's Will Life Last, and we're here. We'll do part two of this, all right? We'll jump in. We got a lot more stuff. I got a few pages from the actual book, Harvest of Empire. We have a few more minutes of the documentary to watch as well. And we'll also have some more scriptures to go over. Once I go in the book, you'll see more of the scriptures and things like that that come out in relation to this. So we appreciate the support. Continue to stay in the spirit. Make sure that you guys are studying, that you study, especially with the Jesus Moreno BS. Make sure you're studying so that you don't get overthrown. Your stumbling blocks coming your way. Pray and definitely application, brothers and sisters. That's the thing that's going to really set things off for our people. So, all right. With that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
Oh. Keep with the music, but we still on the air. I don't know. I know it was counting down. Like when it was really
that's the Block Talk.
Yeah, okay. Oh, but we still live on Facebook?
No, we're still on Block Talk too. That's just to let you know.
Oh, so we almost had
2 hours.
Yeah.
Slot,
I got you. Oh, it still keeps running after the 2 hours? Oh, I thought it just stops.
No, it doesn't stop. No,
okay. I don't think you got us up there. Yeah, no, but I'm going to come through next week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You want
to hit
it off?
Yeah. I'm trying to hear the rest of this.